Want to get the most out of the tread on your tires? Burt Brothers is offering a free alignment check and $20 off any oil change. Book your next service online today or stop by any Burt Brothers location near you and let them get your car ready for the adventure ahead. Burt Brothers, complete auto care done better.
Do you love the Tabernacle Choir? This year, the choir's music is everywhere you are. Listen to your favorite choir songs and music and the spoken word anytime you want on Alexa by simply enabling the skill.
Alexa, play the Tabernacle Choir.
Now playing the Tabernacle Choir.
You can also download the Tabernacle Choir app, subscribe to the choir on YouTube, listen on Spotify, and have access to all their wonderful music. Happy listening.
Right, guys, welcome into another episode of the Crimson Corner. I am your host, Michelle Bodkin, your Utah Utes insider for KSLSports.com. And with me today, I have a very special guest, as is always the case every week. I mean, if we're being perfectly honest, because Utah Utes are the best. That's why you're listening to this, I would hope. But we have former Utah quarterback Jordan Wynn here to talk a little bit about what he's seeing in Utah thus far in the 2022 season, as well as giving his thoughts on, you know, what needs to happen against San Diego State this week. Jordan is someone that is very familiar with the Aztecs, having played them a couple of times, at least once, with the Mountain West Conference, and it was probably one of his better games. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, playing down in San Diego, that Poinsettia Bowl against Cal, that was a huge win as a freshman for him. I have the sweatshirt. It's really kind of hideous, but I still have it.
That's awesome.
Jordan, how's it going?
Well, everything is just fine and dandy. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, we're starting to get the hang of this whole new job and doing podcasts and things that I have never really done before. So we're happy about that.
That's good. The podcast, it's a journey. It's different. So kudos to you for getting it done and figuring it out or trying to. And no, happy to be on.
Well, we appreciate you big time. And yes, absolutely. Technology is not my friend, but we are making it work. So, you know, with that being said, what do you feel like you've seen so far out of this year's team? Have they met your expectations yet?
Tough to say. Obviously, the preseason hype may have been the highest it's maybe ever been. Tuning into ESPN and game day and hearing a lot of people, the majority of people, I would say, actually picking the Utes to actually get into the playoff is, I mean, that's a lot. That's a high expectation. Obviously, we'd all love to see it. I think you're one or two plays away from winning in the Swamp. You put up 73, whatever it was, last Saturday. So I think the expectation is unknown still, and I think the team really is a little unknown, in my mind at least. You know, you saw some good things in the Florida game, the ability to drive down, I think, 90 yards in the two-minute situation was fantastic. There was some red zone woes. Ran the football well last week, you know, just really a complete domination. So this week's a little unique. San Diego State, I don't know if they're as good as they've been in the past, but they're still a solid program. And then you dive into conference play. So I think the jury's still out, but, you know, in the next few weeks, we'll have a pretty good idea.
As a quarterback that's been thrown into some high-pressure situations, including a Wyoming game where Utah was actually kind of down and needed a spark, that was your first time playing, taking the lead for Utah. And you led the comeback. Watching Cam Rising's final drive in that Florida game and getting so close but coming up just short, you know, what are your thoughts as a quarterback that's kind of been thrown into a similar situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think Cam's is a lot more high pressure than mine was. That's just the beauty of being in the Pac-12. I thought, I thought he handled it incredibly well. I think Those are tough situations. They're situations that Coach Witt makes sure are they're practiced, they're repped. So you know what you're getting into. You know, honestly, we used to practice it so much, it almost seemed like it was easier in the game, which is what you want out of practice. And so I thought he handled the actual mechanics of the entire situation extremely well. Obviously, the last throw of the night was one I'm sure he wishes he had back. But I was talking to Bill Riley about this after the game on, you know, the following week. And you can't fault Cam for trying to win the game. And I think that's something that got overlooked a little bit that week, in that as a former player and a former coach, I would lean towards it's on the coaching staff to reel him in a little bit. And as a player in that situation, I'm sure if you ask Cam in that moment what he was thinking, I'm going to fit this ball in and we're going to score and win the football game. And that's an incredibly aggressive and confident mindset, but that's something that you want out of your trigger man. And so, yeah, that was kind of my thoughts on that whole thing. I don't really, you know, it's easy to look and say, well, there's three guys around him. What, you know, what's he doing? Does he slip? But I look at it like, hey, he was being aggressive, trying to win the football game, and it didn't happen. So you move on and bounce back. And I think they did that last week.
What were some things that you liked last week? Obviously, you know, it wasn't the most exciting game. I think everybody knew that Utah was going to win and win pretty handily. I think they did exactly what you expect, you know, with the hype that they received, they should be doing to an FCS team. But what were some highlights for you that maybe showed that they really took the lessons that they learned against Florida and applied them to the next week?
I mean, I think, again, it's tough, and nothing against Southern Utah, but when you play an opponent like that, it's a little tough to gauge really what's happened and what hasn't. I mean, I watched that game, talked about it on the show. You know, defensively, obviously the numbers really stand out. I think you hold a team to 85 total yards in four quarters is astounding. That's, you know, 21 yards a quarter. You know, offensively they had the fumble, which wasn't ideal, but I mean, the running game is where it needs to be in my mind, at least to be able to have a lot of success, especially getting into conference play and beyond. But you know, for me, it's always been the situational stuff. And I feel like Salt Lake in general probably has heard me talk about it too many times, and I'm beating a dead horse, but really that's all the game of football comes down to is situational football. You know, first and 10 between the 20s, there's a lot of people that can have a lot of success. There's a lot of coaches that can call a lot of successful plays in those situations. To me, it's what do you do on third down? And last week, they were great on third down. They were 5 for 10. If you're converting 50% of third downs, you're probably going to be in the top 10 in the country. You're going to extend drives. You're going to keep the defense resting. And those are, I mean, third down is we used to have a, you know, third down is the only down. You'd love to get ahead of the chains and have second and short or just continue to convert first downs. But it really doesn't matter what happens on first and second down if you convert on third down. And so they did a nice job of that. I thought they looked good in the red zone. Obviously no real 2 minute situation or anything like that, but those are the things when I'm watching the games, you know, when they get in the red zone, when they get in third down, when they get into the 2 minute situation, you know, when you get a lead and you're trying to run out the clock, the 4 minute situation, which they haven't had an opportunity to go through that in a game this year. But those are the kinds of things that I pay attention to and look at. And I mean, last week, you know, really just the third down and red zone situation were addressed and they look good.
I think the nice thing about this schedule for Utah has been they know exactly where they stand right out of the gate playing a team like Florida. And good or bad, they had notes. And honestly, I mean, yes, they did not win that game. It's a game that they probably would have, could have, should have won. But credit to Florida, they came prepared and they got that like last play in that determined the outcome. However, I think there was more good you could take from that game than bad per se. So, I mean, Utah goes into Southern Utah knowing exactly what their weaknesses are, what they need to work on, what they need to really focus in on, hone in on. it's a nice kind of game, I guess, to kind of recover from the intensity that is playing in the Swamp. And then you follow it up with a game like San Diego State, where it's a step up from even Southern Utah, not quite as hard as Florida, but not quite as easy as Southern Utah. What are some things that you're looking for from this team heading into the game on Saturday?
They need to go put up another dominant performance. I think anything really short of that, not necessarily as a letdown, but will be a trend in the wrong direction. And again, nothing against Southern Utah. You know, you look at what happened last weekend in college football. I mean, Notre Dame and A&M both paid, you know, group of five schools millions of dollars to come and beat them. So things can go, you know, south really quickly in this game. And so they just need to go out and do what they, you know, what they do: run the football, assert the themselves at the line of scrimmage, tackle well. I know that was a big stressor coming out of Florida, especially with Coach Witt, about how many missed tackles there were, and just continue to improve. That's kind of the beauty of a non-conference schedule such as this one. Like you're saying, you get a real true away test early in a solid program in a really hostile environment in Florida. And then you get to come home, play, you know, against a team that you should beat pretty handedly. And they did. And now you get sort of that mid-level test in San Diego State, a team that's honestly, historically within the last decade has been pretty solid between Brady Hoke and Rocky Long, really good coaching staff. They get good players. They play hard. They're essentially what we were, 12 years ago, crazy to say, but when we were in the Mountain West, you know, a team that's kind of on the outside looking in, trying to find a way to knock down the door. And so Utah's going to get their best shot Saturday night. And you know, the ability to weather that and put up another dominant performance would be a move in continuing in the right direction going into conference play.
Oh, you talked a little bit about San Diego State. I think you're a little more familiar with them than most. Have you looked into this year's team and what do you like about them?
I'll be honest. I haven't had a whole lot of chances to watch them. Obviously, I know they lost in week one to Arizona. And I think an Arizona team that's sort of on the rebuild, kind of a different deal there. I don't really know what to make out of Arizona quite yet, but they went into San Diego and beat them, and then San Diego State played Idaho State, I believe, last Saturday and beat them pretty handily. So in terms of, you know, what exactly you're going to get out of them, I'm not entirely sure. I do know that, you know, playing quarterback for them is a kid named Braxton Burmeister. He's a San Diego guy. We actually recruited him when I was on the staff at Utah. Very, very capable person. He's played everywhere. He's transferred a ton, but a threat with his legs, like capable passer, capable runner. You know, what you're always going to get out of San Diego State is an attempt to assert themselves at the line of scrimmage. They're going to try and run the football and control the clock and play good defense. And that's kind of been their MO really going back, a long time, you know, really since Brady Hoke took over the program. Obviously he left, Rocky Long comes in and does his deal. And you know, they've kind of always been that way. And so I don't know what to make of them per se. We'll obviously find out on Saturday, but it's a team that they really have nothing to lose. And anytime you play a team like that, you're going to get their best shot, especially early on. And if you can handle that and kind of take that first punch, you know, whether it's a trick play, doing something different to try and impact the game like a team would do in that situation, if you can weather that, handle that, and then really, you know, right up Utah's alley, control the line of scrimmage, then the Utes should be fine. And I think the line right now is 21 points. Should be attainable, I think. I mean, I think Utah should kind of run away with this thing in the second half.
You mentioned that San Diego State is a team that has nothing to lose. I think we saw that last season when Utah traveled down to Carson, not quite San Diego, but they absolutely played that way, and Utah kind of sleptwalked through the game until Cam Rising came into the game. How much do you feel like revenge plays a factor in this game, and is that a dangerous rope to walk?
I mean, if I was playing, I 100% would be, you know, in a very revengeful state based on what happened last year. And obviously there's a lot of nuance to that. Obviously you mentioned Cam came in and the offense looked completely different and just really came up a couple plays short and in the overtime there. But, you know, it's interesting because you think about San Diego State's kind of mentality is we got these guys last year, so they're going to come in with some confidence. But if I was on the team now at Utah, and I'm sure these guys are thinking that way, they want revenge. I mean, there's really no other way to say it. When you lose a game like that to an opponent that you should beat, you want to come out and make a statement and say that was a fluke. We're the better program, we're the better team, and here's what it really looks like. And I think that we're going to see that. You know, San Diego State is a good program, but it's very different whether you're playing in the old Qualcomm Stadium, Carson Stadium, wherever they're playing now. I'm not sure. I know they were trying to build a new stadium at one point, San Diego, who knows. But coming into Rice-Eccles is a different animal, and you get the crowd in it and you go put up you know, some big numbers early on, like I said, and kind of weather that initial confidence surge from San Diego State, and you start wearing them down in the run game and making big plays happen in the throw game and getting turnovers, forcing negative plays on defense. I mean, this it's not an easy place to come in and play, and it can get away from you quick if you're not prepared, and hopefully that's what happens tomorrow night.
Talk about Cam Rising. You mentioned, you know, that was kind of his coming out party, was getting thrown into the San Diego State game that looked kind of hopeless by the time they put him in. What makes him so special in your eyes? Again, having been a guy that's played that position before.
Honest, the thing that really, every time I watch him, that is always surprising to me is his ability to run the football. I think that's a really overlooked trait that he has. Even with the success he's had, you know, his touchdown run in the Rose Bowl. He's very capable as a runner. And I think because Utah doesn't run a true kind of RPO spread offense, that we don't get to see it as much. But that's something that's always surprised me with him. I think as a passer, he's incredibly accurate. I think he makes, for the most part, fairly good decisions. I think he understands and has enough experience now, the games within the game, like I talk about, the situational football, things like that. I think he's smart with the football, doesn't typically make, you know, bad decisions and turn it over. But that, going back to just his capability in the run game, is something that's always really surprised me. And I think it's, he does a nice job of almost lulling you to sleep. You don't expect him to be a runner. And as soon as you start to hone in and think about creating pressure or trying to take away the read zone game to the back, he pulls one or steps up in the pocket and scrambles and kind of reminds everyone that he is that capable runner who can make plays with his feet. And that's those guys are really hard to defend. You know, you have guys that are true, you know, dual threat guys that run read zone all day and can make plays with their feet. You have guys that are just pocket passing type style guys, but the guys that can kind of lull you to sleep, but have the ability to pop a 20 or 30 yard run, whether it be from a design or a scramble, those are the ones that are really dangerous. Cause I think a lot of defensive coordinators don't spend a lot of time scheming for that. And I think he does a really nice job of that. He does a nice job of not taking the big hit and finding ways to extend the play. And that's something at the position that's incredibly valuable.
I really don't recall from when you were playing. Did you have a cool nickname like Thick Boy Seven, or are you jealous of that?
No, I mean, I'm not thick, so I could never have a nickname like that. I didn't have very many nicknames, so I don't think I had one. I remember at one point the North End Zone were wearing fake mustaches because I had like peach fuzz on my top lip, and that was probably the extent of any nickname or fun things that the fans did. But he, I mean, he's definitely that. It's a pretty cool nickname, and obviously with the NIL stuff, the wild world we live in now, the ability to sell merchandise and really take advantage of some of those things is really cool.
Talk about some of the weapons that Cam has available to him. I mean, you had some great weapons as well, but I mean, talk about guys like Brant Keithy and Dalton Kincaid. How helpful would it have been to have guys like that?
Yeah, I mean, those two are definitely pretty incredible. I mean, I think they're both going to get a chance on Sunday to play at the highest level. They're really unique matchups. You can't really put a linebacker on them because they're going to beat them in the throw game, and you can't really put a defensive back on them because they're just going to, body them and out physical them. So they present, unique challenges. And not to take any, I played with some phenomenal guys, the David Reeds and Jeremy Brooks of the world, Shakey Smithsons. I mean, there were some incredible players, Kendrick Moyai. I had Eddie White, Matt Asiata, John White in the backfield with me. I had some incredible talent around me, but there's definitely, this roster is very talented. And so it's really wide open. I think, it really just starts with the ability to run the football with the offensive line and with Tavion in the backfield. If you can do that, you can open up a lot of things, and it makes it really easy as a quarterback when there's that balance. And I think Ludwig does a great job of that, putting them in situations where he mixes in, play action, he mixes in read zone, he mixes in fly sweep, he mixes in drop back pass, he mixes in quick game. I mean, there's a multitude of different looks and different sets that you're going to get, and it creates a lot of confusion. And you throw in the ability to run the football like Utah, historically has been able to, and for a quarterback, it's really fun to play in a system like that and to have the weapons that he has.
Historically, Utah has been a very defensive-minded team. I think this year, it and even last year, it's hard not to say that the offense hasn't really carried the team, which is a big switch from how it kind of has been, even when you were playing, and even with some of the talent that you just mentioned there. What's it like for you as an offensive guy to see the offense actually be the ones that maybe ease Utah's burdens these days?
Yeah, no, it's definitely different, like you mentioned. Anytime you play for a head guy that's a more of a defensive minded guy, naturally the players, the coaching staff, everybody in the program is going to take on that mindset. And the success Utah's had both in the college level and producing NFL players on defense has always been there. There's always been a plethora of talent on that side of the ball, a ton of guys that play on Sundays. But it's always awesome to see the offense, perform and play at such a high level. And we used to always joke, going into the 2010 season, that was probably the most continuity we had on offense. And I remember getting after the defense in spring ball and looking around, saying, this is different. This is going to be different. And, lo and behold, I end up with I don't two shoulder surgeries that year. I don't even remember. But so it's awesome. Anytime that the offense can ease the burden, like you said, I think that's a good way to put it. Is always going to be a positive, not only for the program, but as a fan to be able to watch and go, we're not going to see a 20-7 football game. We're going to see the offense be able to produce, be able to put points on the board and score. And that same typical, very tough Utah defense that everybody's accustomed to. And when you pair those two together, that's why last year's team went to the Rose Bowl and was a few plays away from beating Ohio State, is you had a very capable defense, like you always do, but you also had a really versatile, difficult to defend Utah offense. And if you have both of those phases functioning at the level that they were last year, it's tough. You know, you look around at the conference, I don't know how great USC's defense is. Obviously their offense is super prolific and they're going to put up a lot of points, but you know, they give up a lot of yards in the run game. And you look across the league. And so it's very similar. So I like Utah's chances, right? I mean, if they can continue to get things figured out on the offensive side of the ball, I think the defense, everybody knows, is going to be shored up and squared away. And, you know, hopeful for another really successful season.
You were a guy that was a bridge between the Mountain West days and the Pac-12 days. You got to dip your toe into a little bit of both. What do you think of the team now that they've been in the Pac-12 for a while?
I mean, the biggest thing, I think it's no secret, really. When we moved to the Pac-12, the top to bottom roster, I don't know if it was where it needed to be to compete. I think the ones that we had, the starters that we had, I would throw them in with just about anybody out there. I go back to that first year. I mean, week two, we go to SC and we're a blocked field goal away from forcing overtime. So that's the biggest jump. When I go around the facility or I'm around the players or see them out or anything like that, just the way that they look, the body types that they're able to recruit now, the athleticism that they're able to recruit. You know, when I was getting recruited and a lot of the guys years before me and shortly after were very much similar type of recruit. We were the 2 to 3, maybe 4-star kid that was probably overlooked either due to size or maybe didn't quite have all their athleticism yet in high school and came into the program with a massive chip on their shoulder and was incredibly hungry to perform and prove people wrong. And I think as the years have gone by, that's changed a little bit. I would say it's for the better. Football's a game. You know, there's a saying, it's not about the X's and the O's. It's about the Jimmies and the Joes. And it's about the players. And it always will be. And so as they've made this move and continued to have success in this league, they've been able to recruit high, high caliber and highly talented players. And that's what wins you football games. And so, you know, sitting back and watching and just looking at some of these guys, I mean, we didn't have guys that looked like some of these guys. And it's just great to see. It's a testament to Coach Witt. He's always harped on recruiting. And that's really what makes the program tick. And they've done a phenomenal job of that.
How much pride do you have in the fact that despite, and I don't think there's any denying the point that you just made, Utah is recruiting at a much, much higher level. They can get guys that they couldn't get, you know, years ago. However, they still do have some success developing people. And I think the latest success story is a guy like Devin Lloyd, vastly underappreciated, overlooked. Nobody knew who he was. But Utah's finding a balance between getting guys that are ready now and still finding those kind of under the radar guys that they can develop and turn into stars.
Yeah, I think it's a unique talent. It's hard. I mean, I know firsthand, it's hard to project what a 17 or 18 year old is going to look like 2 or 3 years down the road. And so the easiest solution is go get a 17 or 18 year old that's ready now. That's, you know, what the Alabamas and Georgias do of the world. And like you said, Utah's been able to pluck some of those guys and get those guys in the program. And that's, again, a testament to the culture that's been instilled up there and just winning. Winning cures everything. Winning fixes every problem. And the ability to have success in this league on the national spotlight has obviously, you know, getting a guy like a Clark Phillips flipped from Ohio State, that's massive. But like you said, there still are guys that Utah finds and develops and does a nice job with. And that's just a testament to the organization as a whole. I mean, it starts even in the weight room with the strength staff, you know, the Doug Ellisies and the Greg Arguses of the world that, you know, a lot of people may not know, but those guys do a phenomenal job getting players in, you know, such as myself. I weighed 151 pounds my first weigh-in at Utah. By the time I graduated, I was 212. And I mean, those guys do a phenomenal job, and it goes all the way up, you know, throughout the entire organization, the training staff, the equipment staff, the support staff. And it's really cool to see these guys, come into the program and leave at such a high level when they were overlooked. And hopefully Utah continues to do that, because having those guys on the team when they come in with that edge and something to prove is only a benefit.
My last question for you, and this is maybe an unfair one. I'm kind of on record saying I feel like Utah's the most ideal goal for Utah this year is to go back to the Rose Bowl and win it. Do you think that is a good goal for them, or do you think they really should shoot for the college football playoff?
It's a tough question. I think depends who you talk to, I guess I would say. If you're asking like me back as a player, I mean, there's only one goal, and it's to be the best and to win at the highest level. And if you're not planning to do that, or practicing or preparing to do that, then really, why are you even doing anything at all? Taking a step back, and as a fan now, winning the Rose Bowl would be, I mean, a tremendous finish. It's difficult for me. I've such a different, perception being in the program, and at the end of the day, really, for me, it's all about just supporting the university that gave me so much support, and supporting these athletes, because I know what it's like, in the middle of January when it's snowing and you're up at 5 a.m. going to a workout. I know what it's like when it's, tipping 100 degrees and you're going out, at 5 p.m. to throw some extra routes to your receivers. I know the work that gets put in, and so for me, it's more just, yeah, I want the program to be successful, of course. And you combine that with the injuries that I had, and so I watched the game like, hey, can everybody stay healthy? Awesome. Can Utah win the game? Awesome. Can we continue to improve and build as a program and as a university? Great. Like, fantastic. And I think that's what's happening. Anything beyond that to me is just cherry on top. If they go to the Rose Bowl again and have success, fantastic. I loved every second of being a fan at the Rose Bowl growing up in Southern California. It's the granddaddy of them all for a reason. It's a phenomenal event, phenomenal production. Obviously would love to see them win that. To get to the playoff and throw their hat in there against the Alabama or Georgia and see where they really stack up, I think would be incredibly fascinating. And would obviously elevate the program to another level. So I don't know what that looks like at the end to determine success or not. So much has changed with the playoff and how bowl games are scheduled and who gets picked to go to which ones and how that plays out. It's a little tricky to, in my mind at least, to say, but look, I'd love to, yeah. If you're going to be in something, be in it to be the best. And so if you're going to be in college football and want to continue to make waves and prove a point and continue to put the program on the map, then I think nothing, you need to win a national championship. And that's obviously a very high expectation. And I don't know if that is necessarily the expectation. I think, but that's in my mind should be the goal. And if you set the bar high and you fall short and it's a win in the Rose Bowl, that's an incredibly successful season. So, that's definitely a tricky question, and that was a little long-winded of an answer, but I don't know. We'll see what happens this year.
Spoken like a former player, to be perfectly honest. I think that's good perspective, actually, Jordan. And I really appreciate you jumping on with me here and laying down your thoughts as to where Utah currently is and where they possibly could end up going in 2022. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, appreciate it. Sorry it took us so long to connect, and I'm all over the place. So I appreciate you being flexible, and I'm excited about the game tomorrow night.
Absolutely. Thank you again. For those of you listening, this is the Crimson Corner. You've been listening to Jordan Wynn and Michelle Bodkin, your Utah Utes insider for KSL Sports. We will be back next week with a breakdown of San Diego State as well as a preview of Arizona State. As always, go Utes. Don't.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money.